always had like these markers where I'm like, all right, I'm kind of like mentally sprinting to this point, be it a number, like, you know, initially like something like 10 grand a month for my business, you know, back in the day, or, you know, these maybe the kind of house I wanted to live in or the car I wanted to drive or the thing. And then all of a sudden you get to the point where you have all the things, you know, I feel like I have everything I need, but, you know, like now I'm just finding the happiness within those things and optimizing, you know, what I got.
This is an intro. Intro, intro, intro.
Hustle and Flowchart with your boy.
My boy.
Matt Wolf and Joe Fair.
Hey.
Hey. Hi. Welcome back.
I've been here.
So have I.
Funny to see you again here.
Yeah.
And you listening to us or watching us. Hey.
Hi.
How you doing?
Welcome back.
Good to have you.
Oh. Welcome for the first time, maybe.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here.
It's great to have you either way.
Yeah.
Feels like family here.
It does.
It always has.
Yeah.
Well, there was that one time.
Just like the Olive Garden. When you're here, your family.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. They're not a sponsor.
They should be. I want those breadsticks, and there's not one that far from us. It's down the street.
That's true.
Oh, that's a great idea. Why haven't we thought of that place for lunch?
I don't know, actually. Olive Garden, like, never is on my radar.
Why should it be?
I don't know.
The breadsticks. The salad. The endless everything.
The endless everything, yeah. Mm.
But still, not a sponsor. Not a
today,
sponsor.
We're going to drop some endless knowledge. Maybe.
Or, you know. It's timeless, maybe.
Hopefully.
Isn't that what everybody says about financial stuff? Or financial... This is timeless advice. This is a...
Yeah.
Well, there's... Well, we'll break some myths, maybe, with what we've learned in a book that Matt and I have obsessed over a bit. Mm-hmm. I would say Matt more than I. It's the best book ever. You said it's
up there, top 10.
Ever.
One of my top 10.
It's up there. No, it's a paradigm shifter. It's a good one. It's The Psychology of Money by
Morgan Housel.
Housel. Yeah. That's it.
That's it.
That's the one. So, lead us off, Matt. What are we doing here?
So today we're gonna start off this episode by talking about some of our insights and ahas and just kind of having some discussions that were sparked by this book. So that's where we're going to go with this episode. We are going to take notes on this thing. This could lead anywhere. We might start talking about the psychology of money and it goes off in completely different tangents as we've been known to do. So make sure you grab the notes because there's going to be a lot of good stuff, I'm assuming, in this episode.
There guarantee we always make sure there are good stuffs in every note package that we give you. So at flowchartgroup.com is where you want to go and type in your email address when you see the option it's a Facebook group as well. That will get you into the notes. You have to be 2 weeks at the time of this recording dropping that you'll have the ability to get them for free. So flowchartgroup.com.
Yes, go and there.
We also have a lovely sponsor. This episode is sponsored by our friends. And here they are.
Hey, I want to tell you about something.
What's that?
Dude, Ahrefs, you know, the tool we've talked about forever because we use it a lot in our business.
Uh-huh.
They have a free version now.
No way.
They do.
No way.
Yes, it's called Ahrefs Webmaster Tools.
Wait.
It's legit.
Okay, hold on. Let me...
Nice fake typing.
I went to ahrefs.com/AWT. I went to ahrefs.com, and you should too. ahrefs.com/AWT. There's an A before all that.
ahrefs.com/AWT.
Yeah, so we said it about, you know, 100 times, so now it's subconsciously in your brain. So I went there, and this is blowing my mind, Matt. This is crazy. I'm looking at the page right now. It monitors the SEO health. I mean, tell me more, Matt. Why is this important? Why should I?
Well, it monitors the SEO health. It monitors all the backlinks and all the domain and page level SEO metrics and all of your search traffic and keywords and what keywords you're showing up for. And it does it for free. And like, we use the paid Ahrefs, but this is awesome.
You know, I was just kidding over here. I was just having fun.
No.
I wasn't really real typing, right?
You don't.
You knew that?
No.
I don't really type.
Yeah. I can also see you.
Yeah. Okay, in all reality, this is a freaking cool tool. We were nerding out about it when we heard that Ahrefs was coming back for a sponsorship because it's a free tool, no credit card required. And yeah, you get a lot of key things that the bigger Ahrefs tool has in it, that this one basically has like all the key things that every person with a website should have this. So that is you listening.
That is you listening. So yes, improve your website's SEO performance for free. Just go to ahrefs.com/AWT. There they were.
They're great friends of ours. Ah, we appreciate them very much. Okay.
Yes, we do.
So this episode, we talked about the book. Mm-hmm. Psychology of Money is a book that you found. How did you find this book?
It actually popped up on a couple YouTube videos. So first off, I saw Noah Kagan mention it. I don't remember if it was on a YouTube video or if it was in one of his podcasts that I listened to. I think I heard him mention it on one of his podcasts. And then another YouTube channel that I watch, Ali Abdaal, he recommended it. Like, he had a video that was like my top 10 books I've read in 2021 or something like that. And one of them was this book. And it looked really good. And I went and picked it up and I blew through it. So I read it in probably a 3-day stretch. But, you know, sitting down reading for like an hour at a time for 3 or 4 days and just cranked through this book.
Yeah, man. So you almost immediately were like giving me all your aha moments. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them really did come at the beginning of the book too, because I ended up reading the book shortly after. Mm-hmm. And you were saying, yeah, right there with Rich Dad, Poor Dad in the book that basically helped kick us off into business and thinking differently. You said this book is like right there with it. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, they're kind of different, but also they share a lot of similarities.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the big ideas in this book was the idea that the pursuit of the money is not really the thing, right? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of how to word it without just like going straight to the book and like reading quotes. But the big idea of the book, I mean, you read it, right?
I did.
So what's the big idea of the book in your mind?
It's happiness more than anything, and enjoying your journey, optimizing, but being consistent. There's a lot of nuggets in, because I have some notes as well. I know we have a bunch of highlights here. Mm-hmm. But I would say overall is really figuring out what is your ideal life and finding the happiness in that path that you choose. Mm-hmm. And money, there's specific ways to approach money, to use that as a vehicle or a tool to get you to that happiness that you choose. And it's a lot easier than a lot of people make it out to be. Mm-hmm. And it's consistency, it's creating nice systems and not moving the goalposts, like basically like figuring out how to get your ego in check. And, you know, that, so a lot of that is mindset. It's like having a balanced life, something that's kind of, it's just, you know, it feels like you got everything you need or that you ever want, or you have the ability to, you have access to anything you want within, you know, what you've created for yourself. At least that's my takeaway, because like, that's how I would apply it to my life is, it's going for happiness and enjoying the journey.
Yeah. And I think a big piece of it is also just like, figure out how to be happy with what you have, so you don't really want for other stuff. So, because a lot of people, they want to make more money because they want more stuff. They want bigger houses. They want bigger, better, nicer
cars.
Next thing. And there's always this sort of lifestyle creep element where once you get that, there's always another milestone that you want to shoot for. So there's always something after the thing that you just got. You're always trying to like chase something new, where if you can figure out how to go, you know what? I'm pretty damn happy with what I got. Yeah. I like my house. I like my cars. I like the stuff I got. There's not a whole lot that I need to add into the mix right now. I'm pretty happy.
Yeah.
You still try to grow your income. You still go and invest, and you still, you know, work to grow your income. But if you're happy with where you're at, now that the additional money that you weren't making before starts to pile and become that safety net that's available for you whenever you need it.
That was the thing that hit home for me the most is figuring out how to move the goal, stop moving the goalpost. We had a chat maybe, I don't know how long ago it was now, but I was telling you about part of the book I read. It was towards the end, I believe, where it kind of sank in, because I feel like that's a common thing during the book is this concept of getting your ego or your desires in check a little bit, where it's, you know, stop moving the goalposts, meaning do you really need to get another house because you felt like you've kind of maxed this one out in terms of like, you know, I want something a little bigger. Or I see my buddy just, you know, did really well with his business or something. And, you know, like he got that house or that new car. It's like, I bet I can. I want to do that, you know, and then you just kind of keep pushing yourself. And that hit home with me because I feel like that was my internal, I always had like these markers where I'm like, all right, I'm kind of like mentally sprinting to this point, be it a number, like, you know, initially like something like 10 grand a month for my business, you know, back in the day, or, you know, these, maybe the kind of house I wanted to live in or the car I wanted to drive or the thing. And then all of a sudden you get to the point where you have all the things, you know, I feel like I have everything I need, but you know, like now I'm just finding the happiness within those things and optimizing, you know, what I got. Mm-hmm. And to this book's point, basically talks about like saving like a madman mm-hmm. or madwoman and using vehicles like index funds and, you know, all these long-term investment vehicles that you can then just compound your way into wealth while you're, you know, optimizing what you got right now. Mm. But yeah, moving the goalpost thing, I think that like the perspective or that shift allowed me to kind of just chill out a little bit mm-hmm. and feel like, wait, hold on, I don't need more, you know, because it almost, I'm trying to remember how, I mean, we had this conversation because, you know what it was? I was thinking through this exercise with Angelo and Alpha Hippie, you mm-hmm. know, and it was like future pacing. So I was looking out like 20 years. That's what it was. And I found myself still living in the same place. And I was mm-hmm. like, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. How would I be? And before that, like up until just last week, I wasn't thinking that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking like, oh, now I'm probably going to get another place in the next like few years. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like on to the next place because I've always bounced to another few years at a new location. So mm-hmm. that was my goalpost. Yeah. And I feel like that was like a lot of my drive in business. And it's like, okay, well, I need to make more too so I can afford that bigger place with more yard or a pool or something, you know?
Yeah. And like a big piece of it is you got to step back and you got to look at the motivations for wanting a lot of that stuff, right? Like some of the examples that they used in this specific book was like when you see a Ferrari driving down the street, like people strive to get like these supercars and stuff, right? And we have friends that have supercars mm-hmm. and I actually think they're really cool, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've never really had a huge desire to own one. But you see these people driving in the supercars, and most people don't look at the person in the supercar and go, man, that person's really cool. I respect them because they got that car. Or, you know, like I
want to know their story.
Like, look at that person. That person's amazing. People buy those cars thinking that others will look at them and go, I want to be like that person.
He's cool.
Right? But what really happens is when you see somebody in that car, you're like, I wish I had that car. Mm-hmm. You're not sitting there going, that person worked hard and is awesome because they got that car. That is so cool that they managed to do that. You're sitting there going, screw that guy. That should be me in that car, right? Yeah, like that's what most people think when they see those cars driving around.
I saw some like crazy car the other day in my neighborhood, and it was like, I did, because it was after I read that part of the book, or that's kind of throughout the book too. It's kind mm-hmm. of like another concept, like a recurring thing. And I caught myself in that position though, like looking at this car going like, ooh, mm-hmm. but it wasn't about the person.
Yeah.
Like I took a quick look at like, I just always like to see the person behind a wheel of something, but I was like, I really want to just drive that thing around the block or just like, you know,
yeah.
give it a shot and see what it's like. It wasn't like, yeah, I want to embody that person in that, but no.
Yeah, yeah. No, like we
or
have
respect for that person. It doesn't, no.
Yeah. So we've got friends who, you know, they've got supercars and they've got the car and they're like, you know, I love the engineering. I know what went into the car. I know like all of the mechanics of how it works and I love taking it to the track and I love trying to beat my times. And like they have this very like intentional reason that they always wanted this car and they got it and they use it in that way. And then we also know people that are like, man, if I get that car, I'm going to get all the ladies or like all the guys are going to want to be me and all the girls are going to want to be with me. Right. Like people think that that's the reality, but that's not really the reality. No. Now I'm not saying it's bad to want those things. Like the first example, sure. I think that's a great reason to invest that if you've got the money and it makes sense and cool. But the people that are doing it because they want others respect, like
it's motivation. That's all it is in the book. But yeah, it's happiness too. It's like, what's happy to you? Like, what, does that truly make you happy? Then shoot, whatever, man. Mm-hmm. Maybe that fulfills your own happiness is trying to look cool to other people. And that just somehow makes you look happy or feel happy. Then good on you, Matt. You can, no, that's not you for sure. But so I would say that was a big one. One of the, I don't know. There's a lot of aha moments as I look at my notes right here.
Yeah. Just pull one out and let's just riff on it.
I mean, from chapter one, let's see here. It just showed that, and I've heard this from a lot of parts, but like not a lot of people have really good money skills or saving habits, which mm-hmm. is like a big part of this book. So it said basically most Americans can't come up with $400 from their savings to cover unexpected expenses. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, man, that's wild. And I think it was saying, you know, obviously more of the business-minded folks are people thinking about this. I'm sure it doesn't include them, you know, but I'm sure it could very
readily. I know business owners that are living,
of course,
you know,
I've been there
week to week, month to month. Yeah,
I've been there. I know you've been there too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but it's when I read that, I was like, wow, damn, that's like no buffer, because you think of the pandemic and, you know, the ripple effects that still have come from that, rising prices in a bunch of spots. That's pretty crazy if like people are, you know, if that's it. And because basically the book makes a point that everyone has the ability to save.
Yeah.
If you have the right psychology around how money works and the use of it as like a vehicle to get what you want out of life.
Mm-hmm.
Now or in the future.
Yeah. No, I mean, how many people do you, I mean, to me, that's not that shocking. To me, that's like, yeah, I don't think most people have much money set aside for a rainy day. Like I know a lot of people personally, you know, a lot of the same people who constantly talk about how they don't have money to do stuff.
True.
Yet they own a boat and a dune buggy and a motorhome. And like, you know, like they own all of these toys, but mm-hmm. they're constantly complaining about how they have no money to do anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
and that's being rich, right? Like, so the book was also saying that there's a difference between rich and wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Wealth is when you have those savings, and it also has wealth of time and freedom and happiness and all that, you know, it can come in many forms, but yeah, rich, it was saying, are like the boats, the supercars, mm-hmm. you know, the extravagant houses and things that just look like, I mean, it doesn't matter, it, like, because it proves the point that, yeah, you got to pay the bills of those things. So you're obviously making bank mm-hmm. to afford that thing. You're not like homeless.
Yeah.
But, like, come on. Like, you have an ability to get there, but is that, but it, do you really have a lifestyle still outside of those things?
Yeah. No, they suffer happiness. From the lifestyle creep kind of thing, where as they make more money, they figure out, what more expenses can I add into my life to, you know, fill the new gap that I created, right? So like they just, that's the lifestyle creep element. And I've definitely been there, but now I kind of feel like I've gotten to a place where I've sort of stopped that momentum. Like I'm in the house I want. I don't really desire a new car. I like the cars we got. Like we're good. We're
yeah.
like, I'm sort of stopping that train now while still trying to increase the income and for sure. invest and make more money. But that train of like finding new expenses has stopped for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And this, my combination of reading this book, you know, and mainly the few chapters, the first ones is where it set in. And then thinking of like my future going through this legacy thing, like writing out how will I want to be remembered. It wasn't like, you know, part of mine was living.
You had a sweet Ferrari.
I mean, that's maybe.
That's what's going to be on your headstone.
I have a sweet Ferrari.
Yeah. Had a sweet Ferrari.
Had a sweet one.
Yeah.
It'll be just a big Ferrari. Yeah. I'll be inside of it.
Yeah.
You're the tomb. Ferrari tomb.
Yeah.
So cool. Not sponsored by Ferrari, but we'll gladly accept a trade.
Yeah.
Do you want one too, Matt?
Yeah, two.
No. Matt, give him like the lowest possible model. I mean, it's still a badass car, Matt. Come on.
Why?
Don't complain. Because you're throwing me in. I'm the dead guy here. I'm the one that needs to get buried with a Ferrari on my tombstone to be remembered in this light.
Fine. If this theoretical situation where Ferrari goes and gives us two Ferraris so that we can sponsor, they can
Ferrari
sponsor us.
Looking at you.
Then fine. You can. I'll take the older of the models.
See? Come on. It's a good deal.
A lot of times the older models are more valuable.
Damn it. Okay. Right. We'll approach that bridge once we get there in our cool Ferraris. All right. There should be cool sound effects in there somewhere.
There they were.
That's it.
That was them. Now Jacob's just going to put that in the rest of the episode. He's going to clip out the Joe going rum rum and then just like.
That wasn't me. That was the sound effect. You have no proof that was me. None.
Okay.
All right. So, I gave you some, where were we? Ferraris.
Yeah.
Yeah, legacy. Just how you want to be remembered, how I want to be remembered. It was like having a good time and not basically trying to stress myself out sprinting to another goal all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think, that was the other thing in the book. The guy chose, and he's 36 years old, the author of the book, Morgan mm-hmm. Housel.
Housel. Yeah. I don't know how it's pronounced. Housel. I think it's Housel.
Housel. He's 36, so that's how old I am.
Mm-hmm.
You're a couple of years older. You're geriatric.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, this is interesting because it's kind of like a time of my, you know, it's the same seasons of life that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And he chose to pay off his house as like his thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, his thing was like, I don't want I just want the freedom of getting rid of that thing completely. and not worrying about it because I got my thing. You know, it's it's not the best financial advice, he was saying, but he's like, I'm going for freedom. You know, I'm going for happiness. So it's like one less mental thing to, you know, put on your radar that you like almost have to cover every month.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think it was just like, it was freeing my mind of a lot of things where I was like, you know what? Yeah. What the hell? Like, what's the point of doing extra stuff and doing all these crazy things if I got what I want, but I can optimize the crap out of it and then also at the same time build for the future using a bunch of other stuff. But it's not like a how to make money book.
Yeah.
No, been very quiet, though.
Yeah. Sorry,
talking a lot here.
Yeah.
I would love to hear your thoughts.
Well, why don't we grab another, like, aha from, like, chapter two and chat about that, because I think we've beaten the horse to death of the... You don't let your lifestyle get away from you.
Yes. We beat it to death. Thank you, Matt.
It is horse. Now just a puddle.
Ew.
A puddle of bones and guts.
Wowee.
Okay.
Ugh. let's see. So luck and risk. So the two factors that basically a result can come from. And I mean, I don't have word for word here, but essentially it was making the point of, a lot of people will analyze their results based off of something they did, like an action. Mm-hmm. And that's usually, where the heck is it? There's like a risk factor to an action, typically. You kind of can predict more or less your risk tolerance, you know, going into something, and you feel something that's like, you know, it's your ability of doing stuff. But they say luck is like a whole different factor that you can't really quantify, can't really measure, but sure as hell plays into things, like, you know, just meeting someone at a lunch or something, you know, like a business lunch, some event that you go and you're hanging at the bar and someone's ordering a drink right next to you, and you strike up a conversation and it turns into like your next cool affiliate partner or something. You know, you can make a lot of money together. That was that little luck? Yeah, maybe not completely, because you're at the same event, the same people, but like the fact that you're right there. And
yeah.
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of other factors there you can't really quantify.
Yeah, like there's an example with Bill Gates in the book of how like people look at someone like Bill Gates and want to kind of model him and follow in his footsteps, right? If Bill Gates can do it, then I can do it. All I got to do is do the same things that he did, right? Like they think that if they just follow those footsteps and follow some sort of process, it'll happen, right? But when someone like Bill Gates grew, like, was born and grew up in a town, and I don't remember the stats, so some of this I'm just kind of making up because I don't remember it exactly, but he grew up in a town that only had like one high school that had a computer in it, and he happened to get into this school and be one of like 20 kids that had access to this computer in this school, and he learned how to program at this school on this one computer that was like the only computer like in the country. And, you know, how lucky was he to be born to that family in that town and get to go to that high school and have that opportunity? How can anybody sort of model that? Like, that's a piece of his story that nobody else is going to be able to recreate.
For sure.
You know,
that was so many factors that you can't even quantify. And that was a big kind of an aha moment when you're studying. It says like when studying performance and figuring out what to do next. It's basically impossible to quantify luck.
Yeah, and most people study history, right? Like that was a big piece that they were talking about too, is that, you know, a lot of people look at history of what has happened before as an indicator of what to expect for the future. But like, we're literally always in uncharted territory. Like every day is new uncharted territory. So like trying to predict when the stock market is gonna fall or when the real estate bubble is gonna burst or any of that kind of stuff, like trying to predict that, you're just guessing like everybody else, because the scenario that we're in right now today has like the set of circumstances like has never happened. You know, last time there was a crash, there was like the internet wasn't as prolific, there was a completely different tech that everybody was using, there was there's all sorts of other elements going on in the world, so many other variables that happened at that time that made that last bubble happen, like the housing bubble that crashed last time. It was because of a whole bunch of bad loans that people wouldn't be able to afford. Well, they stopped giving those loans away, so it's not the same scenario as last time, right? Like there's so many things that are different now, so how anybody can predict based on the history of things, it's, you know, it's still just a guess. Like you can look at history and go, okay, this could happen again and sort of prepare for it. But like any prediction of what's actually going to happen is just that, a prediction.
It is. And that relates to the whole idea of not studying a single person and like their journey, like, you know.
Like Bill Gates, yeah.
Exactly. Like studying him and him only and then modeling, trying to model your life or your business around the way that he's done things. Mm-hmm. You know, instead, this book argues that you want to study things in broad strokes and look at trends and data and bigger sets of data. Mm-hmm. So you can then study more or less like angle yourself in the direction of where you want to trend, but you can't, you know, like you're never going to know, but because everyone has their own factors and, you know, their past and their luck that follows them around life and their journey. So yeah, it's like study, don't just study a single person, have broad strokes with pretty much everything. And yeah, I think that's just kind of cool because it almost takes the pressure off a little bit more as well. Mm-hmm. And that's what I feel like this book did a lot of, is like take the pressure off of a lot of maybe common things that just shouldn't be like mm-hmm. a mental loop or a desire of people when it comes with money mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. or effort into going like work or whatever it is like that.
Yeah, yeah. And like any sort of stress that you have over money, any sort of anxiety you get over money, it's a pretty universal thing, right? It's
yeah.
it's you're not crazy, right? I think like that's like the thing that's in the very first chapter, like one of the first sentences in the book is something like you're not crazy, because this is the type of stuff that everybody sort of stresses out over
yeah.
when it comes to money. So, you know, just realize that if you are struggling financially, or you can't wrap your head around finances, or you have a hard time feeling abundant and all of that kind of stuff, like you're not alone. That's kind of how everybody feels about money.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always like some factor.
Yeah.
Like it might not be so obvious looking. Yeah. And still the rich person, the one with the supercars and all that stuff, doesn't mean, you know, they could be completely wealthy as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe on the outside, these people just have the car, but like, because I look around this, actually, now that I've like read the book, I think about this, and like as I'm driving around, and I'll look for kind of nicer cars in not so nice areas. And I know it's kind of maybe a judging thing a little bit, but at the same time, I'm kind of just like, well, it's interesting. It shows where maybe the money is put a little bit.
Yeah.
And maybe the person's visiting. I don't know. I'm like looking out, and I'm like, huh, interesting, because you can yeah. see the inconsistencies. Because they're all around us. Is
yeah.
The masses are kind of to a different tune financially. Yeah.
Well, how many broke ass people do you know that have like barely any money but an iPhone?
Oh, prime example. Good point, Matt. Yeah, you should have a flip phone and earn some cash. Come on.
I know people that are unemployed
and like some cash.
Live with their parents, but they have a MacBook Pro, you know, like.
Yeah, I mean, you better be using that thing as a tool
yeah.
to do something that's going to create more value and like pay for itself at least.
Yeah. It's crazy. No, but I do a lot of the same thing. Like I'm constantly judging, but not like, I don't know the people, so it's not a judge on
the person. No,
it's just kind of
person.
Like observations. It's kind of like interesting that
that's
there's
it.
That house with that car that doesn't fit. Like, no.
And we are just, yeah, it's obviously a complete, you know, we have no truth behind this whole thing, but it's observations. I think that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
It's like, interesting. That's out of place seeming.
Yeah.
And then moving on, you know, it's just noted.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's all it is.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. So I'm curious.
Yeah.
From reading the book, what sort of things do you, like, what sort of tweaks do you feel like you'll be making based on like some of the stuff you've read, maybe like mindset or even like actual like changes you're gonna make, you know?
A big thing has been releasing my mind to, it's almost like the anxiety part of me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not around money specifically, it's more around the things that would create the money.
Mm-hmm.
And create the lifestyle, or support the lifestyle, I guess, that I want and I have and that I want. But it's more of the things I have. And you even mentioned this the other day, is
mm-hmm.
the fear of losing what we have.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the most common things, actually. Once you like reach a point of like where you feel like you kind of made the stability of your life.
I do. There's like a like almost like this tipping point where for
it's a fear of loss.
A big portion of our life, we're trying to get more, go bigger. Yeah. I wanted the bigger house, the better cars, the newer computers, the newer equipment, the latest greatest stuff. And then it kind of got to this tipping point, and I think it was around the time we started our family, right? Yeah. When we started our family, we wanted
not
to move.
Not me and you in a family like that.
No, not our family. No. Me and my wife decided to start a family and have kids.
Clarification for the notes, because Alana is reading.
we wanted to move back to San Diego to be closer to my family and her family. But once we got the house that we're in now, we were kind of like, I think we're good. I don't want a bigger house. I'm good with the cars we got. I'm good with what we've got, right? I feel like there is that tipping point where you want more, and now you're like, I don't want to lose what I got. I don't want to lose what I got. I don't want to lose what I got. And I think I've sort of passed this threshold of now I'm more concerned about losing what I have than I am about figuring out how to get more.
I think now I think I've arrived to that point. Or maybe, I don't know what point I've arrived at, but I completely understand that. And I think that is like the most common thing from people who like maybe have won it big, like, you know, made a bunch of money, is the fear of losing it.
Yep.
But obviously, a lot of people do, unfortunately. But it's also, success like this, like, oh my God, I'm now used to this lifestyle. I don't want to give it up. And I want to give it to my kids, you know, and if you have kids, and pass it on.
Yeah.
Or at least the idea of that this is possible. You can work, you know.
Yeah. No, I think for me, the book has really sort of, I hadn't realized that until I read the book. Reading through the book, I think, gave me that realization that I feel like I've gotten to a point where I've really toned down the desire for things, right? I've toned down the desire to have, and even when I see cool gadgets and stuff, like I used to be a little more impulsive where I'd see like this cool drone and I'd be like, I need that Amazon by now, right? Like, but now what I'll do is I'll be like, that's really cool. I'll put it on my Amazon wish list, come back in like a week and see if I still want it. A week later, I'm like, meh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll leave it on there because I might want it next week, but I'll see.
You kind of keep skidding, pushing the puck out a little bit.
Push it out. Next thing you know, I've pushed it out like 3 years, and it's an old model. And I'm like, I don't really want that drone anymore anyway, and I delete it off my wish list.
Thing's a piece of crap. Get it out.
It's not something I did methodically, but it's something that I've realized I do.
It's good. I mean, maybe it's good.
I don't know. I think doing stuff like that, it's almost like you get the gratification of purchasing something by just adding it to like your wish list on Amazon.
Ooh, interesting. That's a cool little takeaway.
Right. Yeah, like I feel that. Like you find it on Amazon, you go, oh, this is cool. This is the thing I wanted. I'll put it on my wish list, right? Maybe when Christmas or a birthday comes around, somebody in your family will see it and get it for you. Cool. Dude. But if they don't, you still have that thing of like, oh, one time I wanted this. And then every once in a while you check back. Do I still want it? You know what? I do really want it. Screw it. It's been a month and I still want it. Let's go ahead and order
it. Pretty good.
Let's spoil ourselves. But for the most part, most things that I add, I'm just kind of like, and then I take it off my list after a few weeks.
I like it. It's cool. Yeah. The little pressure release of like the gratification. I almost purchased it.
I feel like, I'm no scientist.
It's pretty good, man.
But I do feel like you get the same sort of release by adding something to a wish list as you would like adding it to cart.
You know, Dr. Wolf, I would subscribe to that prescription you're giving out.
To that prescription. Okay, thank
prescribe,
you.
Subscribe.
Subscribe.
To the prescription that you're giving.
Okay.
Of this doctoral advice.
$12.99 a month.
Wow. It's good. It's good. Good advice. Mm-hmm. It's cheap. Yeah, budget. Okay.
Yeah.
I think you're right, because the little dopamine release, that's what it is. It's dopamine.
A little dopamine release.
Yeah. Well, you've been like a monster on a wish list things on Amazon forever now. I know that.
Like, yeah, that's more like my family's influence. I actually don't think to add like stuff that I want as like a gift to the wish list. So like a lot of times I'll be putting stuff like boxes of pens or like... like a new notepad.
Mad wants great gifts.
Or like some post-it notes or something like that. And they'll be like on an Amazon wish list. Because I'm like, I'm going to make an Amazon order like on Wednesday. So like throw it on my wish list. Yeah. So I remember that I want it, right? And then like a birthday, I'll roll around and somebody will give me like a pad of sticky notes. And I'm like, thanks. You know,
it's on your wish list.
So I never really saw it as like the gift thing. But like now every time around like Christmas and birthdays and stuff like that, my wife will be like, my mom wanted me to ask you to update your wish list. And I'm like, okay. And then I'll go and add like some, you know, little 10 $1 items to my wish list so people have gift ideas.
Damn. It's a bummer that you're like thinking, you're like knowing people are looking at this where you're just like, you should just load it up with like.
You can make private lists too though.
I know. Because that's
what I started doing.
That's what I use. Yeah. I'm surprised you weren't doing that.
Yeah.
But no, I'm just like, you should just be adding crazy things on there. You never know what's going to happen, man. Maybe one of your aunts or your mother-in-law just hit it big and they're feeling Matt needs this. Yeah. Whatever. Fancy pants drone.
Yeah. Well, typically what I'll do is I create
B-roll for the Hustle and Fluid Chart show. Yeah.
Yes.
Come on.
But yeah, I mean, usually I do add it to like a private list. And then from the private list, like when somebody says like, hey, it's coming up on Christmas or whatever, you should probably update your wish list. I just go look at my private list and go, yeah, that would make a gift. That can make a gift. That can make a gift.
Smart. Okay.
It's almost always books.
But. So we beat that horse to death, Matt. Yeah,
we did beat it to death.
What
was the horse dopamine, we just met? Beat it?
The dopamine release of going to Amazon and buying crap that you probably don't need.
Mm-hmm.
Basically stopping the goalpost moving forward, but it was other. I think it was just like, I don't know. It was going back to the things, right? Like, but you were saying you used to buy a bunch of stuff on Amazon. That's what it was.
Well, I mean, I would just order gadgets.
It was all the latest and greatest.
Like Josh Bartlett's always on top of the tech, so I'd get on a call with him, and he'd be like, "Oh, I got the latest Kodak ZI8." I'm like, "Oh, that's cool." And I get on Amazon while I'm talking to him, and I'd be like, "I just ordered one too." That was like a very keeping up with the Joneses kind of thing.
There was also I know I was always guilty of the Tim Ferriss 5 Bullet Friday like gadgets that were mentioned. It would always be like the latest whatever mixes cream, or whatever. Yeah. Butt creams. Like, Tim Ferriss says it's good. All right, I'll trust him.
If Tim Ferriss puts it on his butt, I should put it on my butt.
Sign me up. I'll subscribe to that too, I guess. Oh man, I'm not gonna have any money after all these subscriptions.
Yeah.
Damn. I gotta learn more about money, I guess.
You could do.
It's my happiness, Matt. But I think what are some on your side of things? Like, what's one that stands out that we might have been circling?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of topics. I don't think we're gonna hit on all of them in this episode, but you know, another thing that I've started doing is I've started every single Wednesday just throwing like little bits of money into like an index fund. And that was something that he recommended. He was like, yeah, just, you know, go to like an index fund that follows the S&P 500. If you look at it historically, it, you know, goes up 10-ish% a year or whatever it was. And it's a pretty safe bet that if you just kind of put some money in there all the time, in 20 years, it'll be very valuable due to compound interest. And ideally, the market keeps on going up. It'll probably have some dips, but it'll overall go up, right? And so I've actually started doing that where like every Wednesday I go and throw like little bits of money at the S&P 500 in an index fund. I also, he didn't say this in the book.
10K a pop.
Yeah, I mean, I just.
20K here.
Just no what big. I find in my couch cushions, exactly. Oh, okay, yeah.
Perfect. It's just stacks. It's crazy. We got to get a picture of you on a couch with like money coming out from under all the cushions and you're just laying back.
Like, yeah, I have pictures like that. I mean, that's my couch. That's just my house. But
have your kid take a picture and send it over.
Next time.
Send it to Jacob.
I've actually started throwing like little bits of money into like crypto also, just kind of like a side thing. So I'm throwing like a certain little percentage of money every week into index fund and a little certain percentage of money every week into like an account that has some Bitcoin and Ethereum in it. I don't mess around with all the altcoins and stuff. I've learned lessons there.
We've been there.
But yeah, so I throw it to Bitcoin and Ethereum. I think those have the highest likelihood of being massly adopted. So I think that's something that if I, you know, not financial advice or anything, but I do think that crypto is over the long run is going to keep going up and up and up, and people are going to look back at it and go, yeah, it's like the S&P 500. Historically, it goes up over time. So put money in it, right? So I kind of feel like it's safe, but who knows? Yeah.
Who knows? And I think that's another point from the book that is pretty big is that no one knows.
Yeah.
That's like the point it was making. It was like, man, there's only what 200-ish years of financial markets to study. And that's not that long, you know, that's not that long at all. So who knows? I mean, like, yeah, it probably will be. Yeah. I would say the odds are in the favor that, you know, crypto of some sort is going to freaking be a big piece of the future for sure. So I think it's super smart.
Yeah.
No, I want to get back in doing on the crypto side. I am doing
crypto.
Crypto side. Yeah. I think it's smart. It's balanced and it should be longevity, like in the long term, it should be a consistent play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's again, just putting points from the book, you know, and kind of realizations for me, it's like, it's the long game.
Yeah.
Just play the long game, but be happy in the now and fund everything that you should be, that you want right now. But also, like, yeah, run it through your filters, you know, use your little buy, your wish list mechanisms to release the dopamine when it's like, you know, 11 o'clock at night and you're like, I just watched a really cool drone video. Yeah. And now I think I'm going to be a cinematographer. That's
get it.
Get
it out. You got it.
Bah.
Good job.
Thank you. But like, yeah, just put it on the wish list, you know.
Yeah.
Save it for the morning.
Yeah.
Reassess. Do you still feel like that? A cinematographer like that?
No,
I don't. No, good. You just saved yourself like $5,000.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how we got back to that thread.
I don't know,
but
doesn't matter.
We figured out how to.
Was
somehow.
There a place you were trying to go, Matt?
No, I was Are just talking. I was just talking about being a little bit more automated with my investing and throwing money into like
consistency,
index and funds,
yeah.
Into crypto. And just kind of like having a routine way to make sure I'm investing on a week by week basis, so I know there's always a little bit more money going into that thing, and it's going to compound over time. So just kind of like making that a little bit more of an automatic thing that just runs in the background.
It's the best thing.
Yeah.
Long term, and it's a system. So I like it. Anything else?
No, I think we kind of
covered a lot.
I think we covered our biggest ahas that we've discussed.
Yeah. They'll pop up, but I think this has been a book that's found us at a good time in our career, in our lives, where we're kind of looking at patterns in our lives and stuff that we just kind of do naturally, but also the places we want to go. Mm-hmm. And this book, I think it gives you a lot of insights into ways to steer whatever your life is financially, but also just whatever. And it kind of like shifts the perspectives a bit, brings some clarity around stuff and gets you thinking deeper. So check it out. Psychology of Money.
Yeah.
By it's a good Morgan book. Housel.
Morgan Housel.
Yes. I said it right. Maybe.
Yeah. And we'll do our best to try to get him on the show because we want to pick his brain on.
Yeah. If you know him or have desires on or know where to find him. Desires.
Huh? Do you guys have desires?
Desires of something. I don't know. Let us know, I guess.
Yeah.
Find us somewhere. Yeah.
I actually tweeted at him and he liked the tweet. So we're connected. We're like buddies. We're
you
like
are best.
We're like besties. So we'll get him.
We'll have to run that clip and ask him if he thinks the same.
Yeah.
You guys best friends, Morgan? Really?
We've never actually met.
Do you remember that like, that click?
He probably does. He just saw, he probably has a team member who's like looks for likes on his stuff and or looks for mentions and just likes them on his behalf.
No, they don't have those. That's not real.
It's not real.
No, it's always the person.
Always the person you think it is. Always.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Tell him the truth. All right, so we'll bring him on the show. If you know him, hey, we'd love an introduction. That'd be great. Yeah. This is how we get guests on our show now.
Yeah, we just ask the audience to introduce us to guests.
Hey, we'd make it entertaining, fun to listen to,
or watch. Could work.
You should go watch us. If you're not watching us, go over to YouTube at hustleandflowchart.tv.
Hustleandflowchart.tv.
We're trying to improve it day by day. We are improving it day by day, I'd say. Mm-hmm. We're doing a lot on the Hustle and Flowchart brand, so it's fun. You should go subscribe and like and watch all the videos and increase our watch time and help us out over there in the YouTube lands.
Yeah. Also, on these Tuesday episodes, we like to answer questions from the audience. Yes, we decided not to today because we wanted to talk about this book and not a lot of people submitted questions. So submit your questions over at hustleandflowchart.com/ask. Right now, I think it redirects to a Facebook post where you can ask your question on the Facebook post. I actually think I might mix it up. I might make it go to like a type form or something like that. But we'll see.
Type forms are cool.
But either way, if you go to hustleandflowchart.com/ask, it'll take you to a place where you can ask questions and we'll answer them on our episodes.
We'll actually answer them?
We will.
We don't just in the last gather a bunch of questions and be like, what do we do with these?
No. Well, last time we let an automated robot ask us questions.
That was fun.
So that worked too.
We'll do that if we have to fill time next time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what else we have? We had the notes, so hopefully you found some wisdom here. Or if it's not our wisdom, it just rehearsed it from Morgan.
We just rambled about a book that we both read and liked. So
that's about it. So if you liked what we said in any form, you should go over to flowchartgroup.com and get the notes by entering your email address, but being quick because you probably listened to this around the time it got live, it got released, whatever, it showed up in your podcast app. Go do it now. So flowchartgroup.com. See you there.
Yes. go there. What and else? We've also got a lovely sponsor in Easy Webinar.
Dang right we do. Those guys rock.
They do.
I love them.
We do love them.
I love them. It's Easy Webinar.
Easy Webinar. If you go to easywebinar.com/hustle, they're hooking you up with a discount for being a Hustle and Flowchart listener. Easy Webinar, it does all the types of webinars.
All of them.
Easy.
Even the ones you've never heard of or even would think of.
Even the hard webinars. Easy Webinar will do hard webinars.
You know what? They don't like doing the hard webinars, but if you're a hard webinar kind of person,
they'll do those too.
You got to give yourself a break for one, yeah. But they'll take care of you. They welcome you, but they're going to definitely convert you into the Easy Webinar type of person.
Yeah. So right. Like easywebinar.com/hustle. You can actually do automated webinars, live webinars, hybrid webinars, live streams. It creates landing pages. It creates opt-in for it. Dude, so much it money. Does so much money. Much stuff.
Wow. You're just going to be, it's like, it's just a money machine.
A money machine. are we telling them that Easy Webinar is going to make the money? Because I don't know if we're allowed to do that.
Are we not allowed to? Scratch all of that.
Yeah.
Easy Webinar
this
is going to hook you up with
this episode is for entertainment purposes only.
I was like, really? I don't know. All right. So they're hooking you up with a fat discount. Ignore everything I said before this about the money factor. You know, I don't guarantee anything. No. We can't do that. All right, so, but I can't guarantee they're hooking you up with a fat discount if you go to...
I will guarantee that a lot of people have made money with Easy Webinar.
Well, they have proof. They have testimonials. So if you go to easywebinar.com/hustle, that is key. Go to easywebinar.com/hustle. I believe there are some testimonials on that page. So if you would like to see money proof, it's somewhere on their domain. Mm-hmm. Guaranteed. So go there. They're hooking you up. Go sign up. They rock. You rock. Thank you.
Yes. Do that. Easywebinar.com/hustle.
Let us know what you think about the show. If you're liking this thing, we're testing out new stuff. We're testing about, we get some ideas for the future too. Mm-hmm. Maybe some, game type stuff.
Yeah, we're going to test some interesting styles for podcasting. We're still going to do a lot of interviews. Thursdays are still going to be interviews. Tuesdays, we're going to experiment. We're going to
just play around a little bit here.
This episode was a little bit of an experiment where we were just kind of like randomly riffing on a book that we both liked.
I think it worked.
Yeah, I think it worked. But I'm
real time thoughts. I'm serious.
I think it worked. I think we got a little bit like tangenty, a little sometimes a little too tangenty on some of the topics, but other than that, I think I like talking about the book. I thought
I was
really
thinking
good
about kicking you off the podcast anyway, so I'm like, that's mm-hmm. The tangents were fun, the tangents they went a little long.
So, but I'm curious what you guys think. Do you want to hear us talk about some of our favorite books? We're talking about doing some like game elements to the show. And
there's going
to
be a hell of long tangents.
Yeah.
Because you ain't getting rid of me, damn it, and you.
Yeah.
I'm the king of tangents, though.
Are you now?
Matt is, too.
I don't know about that. All right.
Holds it in for you guys, though.
I think that's everything, though. If you like this, go leave a review. We will read reviews on this show sometimes. So go do that if you haven't yet.
We would love to read reviews and big time reviews.
Big time reviews.
Ratings, that is.
Big
stars.
Time. Five. At least five.
Five things.
Five minimum.
Five stars.
Yeah.
That's what we want.
Yes.
Please. Thank you very much.
All righty.
Until next time.
See you guys later.
Adios.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Hustle and Flowchart podcast. Before taking the time to listen, we want to give you something a little bit special. Every single episode that we do, we actually have somebody on our team take notes. We basically have a Cliff's Notes version of every episode where you can go and find all of the tips and tactics that they laid out, all of the resources that they laid out, all the good stuff from this episode. We actually have a nice simple notes version that you can find on our website. So go to evergreenprofits.com, find this episode that you just listened to, and give us your email address and we'll send you the notes. Thanks for listening.
Go get it.
Wiki.